That Panthers Islanders series, Jeff Merrick, quite a trip.
For a number of different reasons. Hey, let me ask you a question, Greg, on a completely unrelated topic, completely has nothing to do with the Florida Panthers, how they may behave next. Who knows? I'm just going to ask you totally unrelated.
All right.
Do you remember your first beer?
Like first legal beer or first beer?
Just the first beer. Just the first beer you ever had. I remember mine. It was on.
Go ahead, please.
It was on a patio at a hockey party. I can't remember what level I was playing at. Minor something. My minor band. Oops. I don't know. Something like that. And it was a Labatt 50. Still remember my first beer. What was your first beer, Greg? Remember your first beer?
And Jeff Merrick was drinking the beer, and a dinosaur tried to eat it out of his hand.
My first beer was probably one I stole from my dad, so I would say that would most likely
stolen. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this was most likely a Rheingold when I was like 14 or something like that. My first legal beer I remember very well because it was actually on my birthday at a Washington Cap. I think it might have been a Devils Capitals game. It was definitely a Capitals game that I went to on my birthday when I was in college. And bought my first legal beer. And I remember telling the lady at the counter, I'm like, this, and giving her my ID. Cause at that point I actually had to get carded. Now it's like, they just assume I'm somebody's grandpa. And, she's like, happy birthday. I'm like, well, thank you very much. I'm like, this is my first legal beer. And she actually said to me, but not your first beer, is it, baby? I'm like,
sweetheart. Sugar.
I'm like, wait, are you calling me fat? But yeah, I do remember both of those beers quite distinctly.
Okay, just curious. Okay, now we can get on to the conversation about the Florida Panthers. Now we've got we know what it's like when you have something for the very, very first time and you don't know how to behave around it. Anyway, let's talk about the Florida Panthers last night.
Now, what do you mean by that, sir? Who on the Panthers or related to the Panthers or co-owning the Panthers possibly could have acted out in an unprofessional way last night?
We'll get to Doug Cifu in a second. Hold on a second. Don't worry here. But I was very pleasantly, by the way, I was very pleasantly impressed by your take on the non-call, the Martin on Trocheck non-call, which is a non-call that's always made, which is consistently not called at that point of the game when the netminder is. I was really genuinely, for someone who, you know, who is not a big fan of the game management, you kind of came down on the game management side of things. Sort of, if you didn't come down on the side of it, at least you acknowledge that this is the way things are done.
That's more like it. I've thrown my hands up in the air. I've given up on life. I know that there's nothing we can do about these professional storytellers crafting their calls in order to create the best narrative for the game. But in the big picture, no. Trocheck had the puck closer to the blue line than he did the crease. He wasn't in the act of shooting. He was clearly going to the boards to try to set up something for another guy or to get closer to the crease. That call, even if it is a trip, and the angle that we saw, we don't even know if Martin got the, you know, I guess the got the puck thing is out the window anyway, so it doesn't matter. But like, the point is that even if it's a trip, it's never getting called. It's not getting called on the Islanders. It's not getting called on the Panthers. It's not getting called on the Devils. It's not getting called on the Golden Seals. They don't even exist anymore. It's not getting called. And what pissed me off about it wasn't the travesty of justice that a tripping call in an empty net situation, wasn't called. My problem is so many people and so many journalists pointing to this thing and saying this call cost the Panthers the series. You've got to be kidding me. You know what
cost the Panthers the series? A 3% shooting percentage.
Yeah.
Is what cost the Florida Panthers. And I thought Trocheck nailed it afterwards. Didn't Trocheck say, hey, listen, we scored 2 goals in the last 2 games.
Mm-hmm.
That's on us. That's why we lost the series. It's easy to point to and say this, because of that tripping call. Tavares has to still make 2 great plays.
Yeah.
2 fantastic plays. Oh, and Luongo, that puck scored out.
Yep. And the bottom line for the Panthers, and this is the thing, my takeaway for the series, they were the better team. They were the better team for most of the series. But they lost 3 overtime games, 2 of them in double overtime. And as those games went later and later, you know what you saw? You saw a lot of names on the Islanders taking shots, trying to make plays. Guys that maybe aren't the biggest names of the team, aren't your Tavareses and your Okposos, although it was Tavares who ultimately won the series with this Herculean effort last night, becoming the king of New York hockey. Goodbye, Henrik Lundqvist.
He was great.
Whoa. But you saw a lot of other names rise to the occasion, get shots on goal. Luongo needed to make big saves on the Casey Cizikas's of the world. But as the Panthers would continue on in these games, you started to hear fewer and fewer names. Now, part of that is Gerard Gallant shortening his bench in the overtime sessions, which does not speak well to their stamina or their depth. But then the other thing is that you had guys that just flat out seemed to disappear as the games went later. You only heard maybe like five names of guys that were dangerous in those overtime sessions versus a multitude of Islander players being there. And maybe that speaks to depth. Maybe that speaks to some of these guys being out of their depth in this situation for the first time in their careers. I don't know what it adds up to, but I think that's where you lose the series, is the totality of the Islanders' effort and the Panthers' increasing reliance on only a few guys to make a play.
I think you're bang on the idea that the Florida Panthers, by and large, if you look at the entirety of the six games, if you looked at it and said, okay, who controlled play more, who played the better hockey for those six games, it's the Florida Panthers. It's the Florida Panthers. Like, they were the best. Like, regardless of who moved on, the actual play, I thought, was better on the Florida Panthers side of things. Like, if you look at it and you said, okay, I didn't see the goals, but I'm just looking at all the plays. I'm not watching the puck go over the line. I'm saying, yeah. Like, if this is figure skating and I'm marking it and I'm grading the series, I'm giving it to the Florida Panthers, right? I'm giving it to them. Which leads me to a conversation that I've wanted to have for you, God, for quite some time. But I haven't been able to phrase it quite in the same. I've sort of danced around it a little bit. And it wasn't until a conversation that I had with our mutual friend Bob Mackowitz over the weekend that I fully sort of was able to synthesize what I'm trying to get at. Having this conversation with Bob, and he said, what is, I'll ask you this, you play the role of Jeff and I'll play the role of Bob.
Okay.
What is the Stanley Cup playoffs for?
Broccoli, weed, junior hockey. Oh, wait, sorry, I was just getting into character. What are the Stanley Cup playoffs for? They're to determine. Well, okay, they are to determine who amongst the 16 teams that qualify is the team best built to win the championship.
Did the playoffs satisfy that based on who won between the Florida Panthers and the New York Islanders? Given that the Florida Panthers, outside of that little black thing going over the red line, were the Florida Panthers the better team or the worst team? Was it good enough to satisfy that question? Here's the question you ask yourself about the playoffs. Is it there to be an exciting tournament? Which it is. I love it. This first round, again, wash, rinse, repeat, has been effing amazing. Every single night, I am riveted. I can't turn my iPad. I'm scared to turn my iPad off when I watch on Game Center. I can't. Mm-hmm. I'm terrified because I know some really good stuff's going to happen. That's why I got the Louis Vuittons under my eyes, because I'm earning it, because I'm staying up stupid late watching these amazing freaking hockey games.
Yeah,
I love
take
it
your
so
East Coast
good.
Bias and shove it up your big West Coast asses.
Take that. I'm dragging my ass around every day because you, San Jose, I'm looking at your way to Anaheim. L.A., you're not off the hook yet.
Just like Drew Doughty, you're no friend of mine, Logan Couture.
Take that. We work at the same gym, but other than that, I don't even know the dude. So here's the question you ask yourself. Is it an exciting tournament, or is it an effective way to determine the best team in the NHL? Because what you're doing is you're taking 2 months and you're saying, whichever team is best in these 2 months out of these 16 that qualify, we're going to call them the best at the end of the season. Is it a better way to determine actually who is, quote-unquote, the best, or is that best determined over the 82-game season?
So you're saying the President's Trophy, in theory, would go to the best team in the NHL.
Would it not give you, we keep hearing about sample size, would that not give you the larger sample size to actually judge who the best team is, as opposed to who's hottest for 2 months?
Let me ask
look,
you.
Man, the Islanders go forward. They face off against the Tampa Bay Lightning. I sympathize with Florida Panthers fans because, you know what? You're right, Wish. Florida was a better team in that series, and that happens all the time. But we never have the question, is this an effective way to determine who the best team is? Or do we just say, you know what, screw all that. let's forget this phony myth that that's going to determine who the best team is. We're just going to treat this like the awesome hockey tournament that it is, because it is the best tournament of the year. But let's just be honest to ourselves about it.
I will. Two things. First of all, I would venture to say that the best team won, because the bottom line is that if you're not a team that's built to win any of three overtime games, or simply doesn't win any of three overtime games, I know you're going to talk about puck luck and bounces here, bounces there, but those were all plays. Like,
Hang on. What if that was a best of seven series?
Okay? Yeah. Yeah.
What if that was a best of 82?
Well, then at some point, Halak comes back, and well, I don't know. Okay. I would probably say the Panthers would win.
And at some point, Bjugstad comes back, and like, we can play that game all day long.
Yeah.
But in a best of 82, who wins between those two teams, and what gives you the better, quote-unquote, sample size to determine who the best team is between these two squads, based on what we saw in that series?
Your question's interesting, though, because it's not as if there isn't precedent for regular season greatness versus postseason greatness, right? Like, the only award that actually stretches into the postseason is the GM's award. Everything else, the point of demarcation is game 82. So the idea that the best team in hockey would be crowned in an 82-game sample, and then you get your playoff champion, is not that alien to what we already see as far as the dogmatic nature of awards that were given out. Now, that said, I think that would make a Washington Capitals fan quite happy.
That means everything
that's been written about enjoying the ride and being in the moment and not thinking about the dark clouds that could be on the playoff horizon would speak to the Jeff Merrick, the best team in hockey is the one who wins in the 82 games theory.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just it's funny because I've always sort of said that, you know, hockey is this thing that goes for 82 games, then you play a little bit of a tournament, and arbitrarily we say, okay, now you're the best because you won these 16 games, and we all pretend that it's real, and that does really represent who the best team was. But you always get series where, like between Florida and the New York Islanders, where you really make the case the best team didn't win, but the best team will, because what happened to Florida? Bad luck. So, 3% shooting percentage.
So then what? Mm-hmm. How would you describe the champion? Like, how would you describe the team that hoists the cup at the end of the year? If not the best team in hockey, then what would be the label you'd bestow upon them? Is my curiosity.
Stanley Cup tournament winners. I don't know. I haven't thought about it that far.
I'm more
interested in the sort of philosophical underpinnings of what this means. Like, what is the better way to determine? Like, we all love it. Like, listen, I get caught up in it, too. I always have my entire life. There's never been a year that I can recall consciously that I've ever missed a Stanley Cup playoffs. I love it. It's fantastic. I totally check out like we all do for a couple of months and just live every single day based on these games. But at a certain point, do you not just have to take a step back and say, what's it for? Is it for just pure entertainment and a shot of adrenaline every single night, which it is? Or is it really to determine who the best team is? And if you think it's to determine who the best team is there a better way to do it than this playoff format? Is not the 82 like what would happen? How different would your life be if there were no playoffs? And just at the end of the season,
it'd be very sad.
There's the champion.
It'd be super sad. I'd be super sad.
I'd be super sad too. But let's kind of open our eyes here on this one, right? It's just a cool tournament, man.
Yeah.
It's a really cool tournament. It's an awesome tournament.
It's a really, yeah,
fantastic
but
tournament.
I like, but that's an interesting thought because it's like almost like you've got your Champions League and then you're like your big tournament. Yeah. Interesting.
Like if it were more of an international event than the Washington Capitals after winning, you know, the NHL, I guess we would call it the Stanley Cup Championship anyhow, would go on to face, you know, the champion from another league, if there was sort of on par hockey
what would
around,
you,
the, around the
what
around the
would
world.
You how if you were talking to somebody and they're like, okay, let's say that this is an established thing, and they said, well, what should mean more to me, that my team wins the regular season or that my team wins the cup? Like, what would you say to that?
In a lot of ways, I'm more impressed the more that I think about it, the team that wins the President's Trophy, that wins over 82 games. So you keep hearing about the grind, and there are plenty of dog days in that grind of being the top team in the NHL. As opposed, now, you can make the argument that the game is harder to play in the playoffs, and that is true. But I wonder what would happen if you put the premium exclusively on those 82 games, and that's it.
All I know is that
nights, because players have to pace themselves, A, for the season, and B, with the playoffs coming. If you didn't have to, save something in the tank for those last couple of months, and all you had was the regular season, period, how juiced would all those games be?
All I know is that I hope that somebody clips this conversation and sends it to Ken Hitchcock, because this is going to be Viagra. It's gonna burst right through the ceiling, like a church steeple.
Just an interesting idea from a conversation with our buddy Bob, and it's not gonna change. You know, this is all just cannon fodder. You know, shooting at nothing, and it's not gonna go anywhere. But it's just interesting to think about every now and then. What if the playoffs didn't exist? What would happen then? Anyway,
before we get to the intro, yeah, we should hit the Cats one more time before we hit the intro, because their vocal owner, co-owner, Doug Cifu, who notoriously said that he would much rather play the team that just eliminated him than play the New York Rangers in the first round, also seemed to be outspoken last night about the tripping call.
But he wasn't. Because he knows that publicly criticizing the officiating can land you in sizable hot water with a sizable fine attached to it. So even though this ownership group is all West Point about stuff and standing up for what's right and planting a flag, instead of just saying how you feel, get on Twitter and start retweeting things. And then I go to the Sportsnet Twitter feed. Hang on, I go to the Sportsnet Twitter feed last night, right? I got some of the clips and highlights. And on the one that has the Matt Martin trip on Vincent Trocheck, you're like, oh, wow, trip that cost the Florida Panthers the series or whatever, cost them their playoffs. Right above it on the first like, Doug Cifu. I'm like, come on. Yeah. That's not really happening. Like, talk about passive aggressive.
Retweets are not endorsements.
If you want to say it, say it. Right? Mm-hmm. Don't do this. I'm just going to retweet this and I'm going to favorite this. Like, this is an owner in 2016 doing this. And here's what I fear now if I'm a Florida Panthers fan. This is a very young NHL ownership group. And this is one that, as we've seen, likes to make itself part of the conversation. You look at the amount of interviews that Doug Cifu does and how they all get reposted by Panthers social media. When you have a rookie owner who wants to make himself part of the conversation and help keep a firm hand on the wheel, I fear for what happens next, considering it's a very emotional ownership group that wants to live and die by this team. They've all very smart people, and they've made a lot of money in a lot of businesses. And all those businesses, I have zero experience or qualification talking about, so I can't. But when it comes to NHL ownership, I've seen plenty of these guys come and go. If I'm a Florida Panthers fan, I'm concerned about what happens next. And as you've seen before, Greg, and I think we all have, the wrong time to make decisions is when you're emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you can make horrible decisions that set your franchise back a long, long way.
Well, or just for about a year and a half until you hire Mike Sullivan. Anyways, so we've got a lot to cover, and we'll get to it post-haste. With that, Sam, let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet. Every time I try to talk, you're jumping over me. Why don't you just land the plane here today? I'm going to turn my mic off. You go.
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Well, now it's dead air. I'm waiting. Top right, pop right back in.
You tell me when you're done.
I'm done. Go ahead.
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Fight fiercely, Harvard. fight, fight.
We were getting along so well.
What was that argument about? I can't remember.
I just love that.
What was that
intro,
one about?
It's so funny.
Which one? That was
what
really
was the argument about again, Sam?
What was that one about?
Jimmy Vesey.
Oh, that's right.
Jimmy Vesey. Yeah.
I just love that quote. It's a good one. Anyways.
Well, you know, the Preds would be up 3-2 in the series if, you know, Jimmy Vesey didn't lie to them.
All right. So we do this show on Monday.
Jimmy Vesey didn't lie to them.
We're hours before both the Ducks-Preds game and the Blues-Blackhawks game 7. So I don't want to spend too much time on them because I'm sure a lot of people are going to hear this after those games are done. But in the case of the Blues and Blackhawks, let's pause on that for a second. I'm very happy, no matter how it goes tonight, I'm really happy that Hitchcock is keeping Elliott in. He's earned it. You live by Elliott, you die by Elliott. They're not in game 7 were it not for the way Brian Elliott played goal in this series. And I know that there were a few people, Keith Jones being one of them, that were thinking flip the Jake Allen for game 7. And then you end up ruining Jake Allen if you do that, by the way. I mean, if Jake Allen gets charged for 4 goals in the first period, I think he's playing high lie next year. I don't think he's playing hockey next year.
You're probably right. I mean, the interesting thing to me, I think is going to be interesting to a lot of people as well. We'll get Andy Strickland's thoughts on this one, is the deployment of Vlad Tarasenko tonight. That is the big one. That is the huge one. It was the vine heard around, or the vine seen around the hockey world. Him shrugging him off, right? Tarasenko shrugging off Ken Hitchcock. Ken Hitchcock, like one of the most, you know, celebrated coaches in the history of the game, both at the NHL and international level, just shrugging him off like he's a rookie coach just up from junior.
Yeah.
Here to tell the veteran what to do in the NHL. The fact that Hitchcock had to go out and explain how he used Tarasenko in game 6 and went to great trouble to try to explain to everybody about what his game is like and how they need to conserve energy and how, you know, 5-on-5, he's still got big minutes. And that to me is going to be a fascinating one tonight. And moreover, flip it over to the player as well. I mean, you can't pull a move like that and then not deliver if you get the minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
as much as this is on Hitchcock getting him on the ice, a lot of this is about Vlad Tarasenko delivering. It's a big game for Vlad Tarasenko.
Yeah, we have Andy Strickland, by the way, coming up. I should say we're not going to get too much into X's and O's, but we'll be talking about the Blues in a second. The Vlad Tarasenko thing is also interesting because after the bench blow-off, he did get his longest and largest amount of ice time in the game in the third period. Kind of interesting.
It's good.
Dallas Stars get a huge... Awesome. Here's where I am on the Dallas Stars. I wrote about them this morning on Puck Daddy. I am here. I am in a place where I acknowledge their flaws. I acknowledge that Klingberg and Goligoski will occasionally put down a welcome mat on the ice for opposing offensive players. That's a thing. I acknowledge the fact that Kari Lehtinen, congratulations, first road playoff win in his career and first playoff series victory in his career. Congratulations. Good on you. I acknowledge that neither he nor Antti Niemi can be trusted with anything. I acknowledge that. But that is an unbelievably huge character-building win for them in that game and in that series against Minnesota. And people forget. People sleep on it. But as much as Patrick Sharp and Johnny Oduya get the love for having rings in the room and playoff experience, Jason Spezza is the guy who went through this shit when he was in his early 20s. And he played like he knew what needed to be done in that game.
See that face-off in the dying seconds, the one that Spezza had to win? I thought he was just going to grab the stick. Like, honestly, I'm saying to myself, I'm watching the coach, I'm like, because you saw both guys get false started a couple of times on the draw, and Spezza went down on a knee. And I'm saying, man, if I'm Spezza, I go down on a knee and I grab his stick. I don't care about the penalty. Eat a couple of seconds. Eat a couple of seconds so there's no way they're going to have enough time to get a shot off. I'm like, he's just going to grab his stick. And he was money on that draw. Spezza was outstanding. You know where I'm at on the Dallas Stars? I love them. It's fantastic. It's entertaining. The game's never over. Right? It doesn't matter. No lead is safe. Either way, they can score 4 goals. They can have 4 goals scored against them. I'll put it to you this way, Greg. It's been 24 hours since the Dallas Stars beat the Minnesota Wild in their best of 7 series, and I still think that they can lose to the Minnesota Wild. I still don't believe it. I still think there's a chance that, even though it's been done for 24 hours, I still think that Dallas can lose this series. That's how zero faith I have in the Dallas Stars. But getting there is so much fun.
Yeah, and that game, that whole series, like, no one knows if this style is going to ultimately be successful. It won a round, but that's not a very good Minnesota team at this point. But I was starting to believe for a little bit, like, maybe they are the team. Like, they give up 3 goals, but they score 4. They give up 4 goals, they score 5. Like, maybe they could pull it off against the Blackhawks or the Blues in the next round. I don't know.
I want it to be so bad. Don't you want it to be so bad? This is throwback hockey. Like, honestly, they go, oh, well, this is, I can't stand it. I can't stand the analysis of the sloppiness, because are you completely devoid of fun analysts around the NHL? Oh, well, you can't have this. Look at this defensive breakdown here. Well, yeah, that's very true if you're a coach. But try to position something from a fan's point of view. Isn't this great hockey? Isn't this beautiful sloppy hockey? Isn't this wonderful mistake-filled hockey that is highly skilled enough to look like a credible NHL game, but just sloppy enough that it's fun? Who wants anything perfect? I don't. I don't want anything close to it, right? I want big, sloppy mistakes that lead to fun games. That's the Dallas Stars. Has there been one television analyst who's come out and said, well, yeah, sure, they blew it, but man, wasn't that fun getting there? Like, how about from an entertainment point of view? Dallas is just flat out fun. Just like Washington's flat out fun to watch when they get rolling. I love it. Sorry. You're not going to let... I can't let go of the fan in me when I talk about the Dallas Stars.
What do you do if you're the Minnesota Wild?
Our defensive zone coverage.
Well, you have to be Wild.
What,
now.
After you buy out Thomas Vanek or before you buy out Thomas Vanek?
This is one where now... I remember being at the pool when Parise and Suter signed.
Come on.
And being really pissed off that I had to go and write about it. And then I remember writing about it, and I remember thinking to myself, well, this is an interesting gamble on their part, because they're not going to a team that's necessarily close to winning a cup. They're going to a team that's got a huge collection of young talent that maybe one day will coalesce into a cup champion. But now we're a few years into it. And I don't know what they need to get over the hump. I don't know if they're near the hump. I don't know what they're humping. All I know is that they don't seem to necessarily be on a course right now towards that thing that Suter and Parise thought they were on, in my opinion.
And then the big question becomes, what's the future for Zach Parise? That's the bigger one, and that's the more terrifying one. Like, aren't you watching this game yesterday, Greg, and saying to yourself, if only...
Yeah.
Minnesota had Parise in the lineup. Like, there's so many games this series where you say to yourself, man, this is so close. This is nip and tuck hockey. If only Minnesota had Zach Parise here.
Yeah.
And And I know I'm glib about, you know, Thomas Vanek's going to be, you know, bought out and all that, but okay, well, what happens if Zach Parise doesn't come back? Then what happens to your left side? You starch Parise and Vanek. Boom, boom. What are you stuck with? And Jason Zucker
he's got to come back, you know, though, doesn't he?
Who, Zach Parise?
Yeah.
I hope so. Anyone over the age of 30 who has anything to do with their back, I always get weird about.
Yeah.
Don't you? Like, I don't know.
When you're dealing with that, then you're dealing with the word chronic. And unless you're Dr. Dre, that chronic's a bad word.
Chronic's a real bad word.
obviously Torchetti's not coming back. It'll be really interesting also to see what they end up doing in the coaching spot there too.
Yeah.
I don't know. See what's up.
That'll be an interesting one. I mean, there's a lot of quality hockey. I love Jared Spurgeon. And we've always been on the same point about that as well. You know, there's some good players. Every team's, oh, yeah, there's good guys coming. But Joel Eriksson, I think, is a hell of a hockey player. There's a heck of a draft pick. Niederreiter that whole line with Niederreiter, Halla as well. Even though Jason Zucker in his own words said he had a soft season, needs to be better, I think there's a really good hockey player there. He's only 24 years old. Like, there's Charlie Coyle. I think there's a lot of
good players
there. But, man, the Zach Parise thing could be just devastating to this team. Just devastating. And they got a lot of bad contracts.
Mm.
Right? Like, Mikko Koivu is not a $6.7 million player anymore at 33, is he?
Oh, but he had a better year than I thought he would, man. I thought he was going to be an albatross. I thought he was okay this year. Joining us down the line is a guy who may or may not be writing a lot of stories about the future of the team and contracts and what to do now that things have gone south. Or he could be writing stories about how the St. Louis Blues have exorcised the demons and have moved on to the second round, depending on what happens in Game 7. Andy Strickland joins us here on the America vs. Wyszynski podcast. Good to have you back, sir. Where's the wind blowing on the Blues for you? What do you think about Game 7 tonight?
You know, guys, it's been a long time since the Blues have hosted a Game 7. I mean, you got to go all the way back to 2000 when they won the President's Trophy that year. You guys remember Al MacInnis and King Chris Pronger. Of course, Pronger was the MVP that year and the Norris winner. Joel Quenneville was behind the bench for the Blues back then, and he won the Jack Adams. And Owen Nolan beat Roman Turek from the red line, which is still haunting Blues fans to this day. And, of course, the Blues lost the game. And they haven't hosted a Game 7 since then. They have played one since then, which they also lost in Vancouver. So they're just hoping it's a different result. But I will say this. Usually there's a lot of excitement, which there is for tonight's game, but it's also some nervousness when you consider how this series has played out. They, of course, had a 3-1 lead. They would have thought that, you know, Game 5 would have potential, or would have been a potential clincher when you consider how that game played out. Tied after regulation, and the Blues would have carried the play late in that game and then into the first overtime. Then you lose Game 6. So when you consider this team hasn't gotten out of the first round the last 3 years, and then how this series has played out, believe me, there's a lot of anxiousness throughout the city as we approach 7:30 tonight.
Well, I'll just ask you then point blank. I mean, last year, I think at the end of the season, when the St. Louis Blues concluded, Ken Hitchcock, I think in his own mind, was sort of dead man walking. They let him twist in the wind, didn't make a decision on his future, brought him back on one-year term. Here we are, Game 7. They were up 3-1. Don't need to go over the history with you, Andy, but is Ken Hitchcock tonight coaching for his life?
You know, you could probably make that case, to be honest with you. I don't know about his life. Maybe his life as a head coach of the St. Louis Blues. You know, there's going to be some other teams out there looking for coaches. And, you know, one thing that I've been saying all season long, because the Blues obviously have had a lot of adversity, but I think this is the best job that he's done, at least during the course of the regular season, since he came to St. Louis, when you consider all the injuries they had, how difficult their division is, and how he had them up until the last day of the regular season competing for a championship in the Central Division. I mean, you can't knock what this guy did during the course of the regular season. Now, we all know that he was going to be judged even prior to the season based on how he performed and how the team performed in the playoffs. And there's heavy expectations, once again, for this organization entering the playoffs this year. And we all know if you don't meet expectations, there's a good chance you're going to see changes. But I have said all season long that don't kid yourself, even at the end of the year, Ken Hitchcock, too, will be a free agent. He's going to have the ability to decide what he wants to do, if he wants to continue coaching or if he wants to go and do something else. And you would think, based off of his run here in St. Louis, even though they haven't gotten it done in the playoffs, I wouldn't be shocked if another team dialed him up and offered him a job if he doesn't return to St. Louis.
Yeah, I kind of feel, and I also feel like they had their hand was a little bit forced. I think they were really worried about giving up that regular season success and trying to make a coaching change and not knowing if it would be even effective in achieving what they want to in the playoffs. So it was a weird spot for them to be in. But that said, let's dive into Ken Hitchcock and his relationship with players with lots of vowels in their names. What the hell is going on with Tarasenko and Hitch? I will say that Jeremy Rutherford, beat writer for the Post-Dispatch, did kind of try to throw some water on this fire by saying, hey, everybody, look at the usage, look at the ice time. It's not as big of a deal as you think it is, especially that 8 seconds of power play time. I mean, it was a thing where the second unit was playing so well, the first unit couldn't get out there, yada, yada, yada. But it is kind of curious that a 40-goal scorer doesn't get more ice time on the whole than Vladimir Tarasenko does.
Well, everyone's focusing on that particular power play. There was also a power play at the end of Game 5 when he didn't see a ton of ice, and there was another one earlier in the series as well. Listen, Ken Hitchcock understands how good Tarasenko is, and the reality is, you know, in a one-game situation like we have tonight, he's the one player for the Blues offensively who can truly carry the team and advance this team beyond the first round. I don't care what sport it is, guys. I don't care if it's football, basketball, in this case, the National Hockey League. You need elite players on your team if you want to win championships. And typically, elite players obviously advance you throughout the course of the Stanley Cup playoffs. He's their one true superstar on the roster that they have right now offensively. And you're going to have to rely on this guy considering how dangerous he is. You don't have anybody else on the team who can duplicate what he does in terms of his ability to score in so many different situations and from all over the ice. I mean, when you consider how much ice he's seen thus far this series and he's been as productive as he's been, it really is unbelievable when you look at, you know, how he creates his scoring chances for himself. So there's been a lot of talk about the ice time. Hitchcock has tried to shift that talk towards how many shifts he's had during the course of the game, the length of shifts. He's never been a guy that takes a lot, you know, long shifts. You look at the Blues as a whole, typically they take very short shifts. But, you know, to me, the number of shifts during the course of the game, guys, can be very misleading, especially in a hard matchup situation like we've seen in this series. I mean, guys are on the ice sometimes for 10 seconds. The puck goes out of play, you have a whistle. The other coach throws out the line that he wants, and then all of a sudden Ken Hitchcock is matching that. So, you know, is that a shift when you're out there for 7 seconds or 10 seconds? So I don't always pay attention to the number of shifts. I like to pay attention to ice time as a whole. Shift length obviously comes into play for sure, but let's face it. At the end of the day, Vladimir Tarasenko is one of the true elite snipers we have in the National Hockey League. He's got to play more than 16 minutes per game. I think most people would agree with that.
You know, it's interesting, too. Whenever I see a Game 7, I always say to myself, no one's ever looked back at a Game 7 and said, what a great coaching job. Wow, look at the way that that system propelled the team to success. Whenever you look at a Game 7, you say to yourself, which player said, screw this, boys, get on my back, we're not going to lose this. We're going to win this game, and system be damned, whatever. If it's one game, it's funny because in a lot of ways coaches will hate Game 7s because you know it's that moment where there's going to be one player or two players that really bring it to that next level, and even though it doesn't jibe with what the coach is going to do at that moment, it will probably be successful, and it will mean that you advance. Is Tarasenko that guy? Or am I missing someone? Because to me, it goes right back to, if Tarasenko wants it like Tavares last night, St. Louis Blues are going to advance.
Well, I was just going to bring up Tavares just to hammer home your point, because I think you make a great point there, Jesse. I mean, you look at, you know, at Tarasenko, like I said, I mean, very few guys are as dangerous as he is, not only off the rush, but the ability to beat you one-on-one. He can consistently beat NHL goaltenders from distance with a wrist shot. I mean, how many times have we seen him do that? Very few guys in the world have that ability, without traffic in front, to be able to beat an NHL goaltender with a wrist shot consistently from distance. He can do that. So, you know, you look at their other dangerous players they have right now offensively. I mean, Alexander Steen is one of those. Probably is playing at less than 100% like a number of guys. So is that a factor, or has it been a factor in this series? You can make that case. You know, on the other side, you're going to look at number 88 and number 19 because they've been making a living of doing this their entire lives, and of course their entire careers as NHL players. That's why they're considered elite players and great superstars in this game, is because of their ability to raise their level and elevate on the biggest stage. And there is no bigger stage right now in the NHL, at least for this season, than a Game 7 in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Obviously, it'll get bigger as you move on if you advance. But Tarasenko is for sure that guy, and I agree with what you're saying. I think in a Game 7, it is on the players. We focus so much on the coach. This is a great opportunity for a number of guys here in St. Louis who have never played in a Game 7. There are some who have, but a number of their core players have never been in this situation. This is a great opportunity for these guys to really etch their name in franchise history, make a name for themselves league-wide, and be the hero for a night. I mean, this is no better opportunity than what they're going to get here tonight at 7:30.
All right, last one for me, Andy. Thanks for joining us. Let's say, and this is going to sound crazy, the Blues lose to the Blackhawks in 7. What are we looking at in this offseason? First of all, what are we looking at vis-a-vis David Backes? Second of all, is there any specific area of the team you think that GM Doug Armstrong will attempt to address in a significant way? Should they... And again, this is just completely batshit crazy. Should they lose to Chicago in 7 games?
Yeah. Well, let me just take that question and go into a completely different direction real quick, which I'm prone to do,
okay.
So I apologize in advance. But, you know,
that's fine.
This is the problem. This is the problem I have with the playoff format in the National Hockey League, because if you look at this division, and, I mean, St. Louis is playing Chicago, the defending Stanley Cup champions, and I get all that, but they had well over 100 points, and they're a team that obviously is prone to make another run when you look at the star power they have. talking to people connected with Chicago prior to the series, they didn't want or weren't too excited about playing a team like St. Louis. So one of these two teams are going to get knocked out in the first round because of the format we're under right now in the National Hockey League. So does that mean you need to overreact if you don't beat Chicago or if Chicago doesn't beat St. Louis? Do you have to blow it all up, and do you have to make all these roster changes? I understand some of the changes we talked about earlier in this conversation that maybe would certainly be made, but in terms of blowing it all up because you lose to a team like Chicago, I think you got to be real careful there. You know, I think it's different than last year when the Blues won the division. They lost to Minnesota in the first round. On paper, they should have beaten that team. You look at Minnesota, they moved on. They got swept by Chicago in the next round. But in terms of how you react, I think you got to look at the entire situation as a whole before you make any true drastic decisions.
Andy, don't worry about your question. All questions here on the podcast are all nothing more than recommendations. We'll just make some sound, and then you just say whatever the hell you want. But last one for me. Greg is the pessimist. I am the other hand, on the other hand, Andy, am more of the optimist. Yeah. Let's assume St. Louis wins tonight, and they go on to face off against the Dallas Stars. How does that matchup look to you?
Well, I think it's a better matchup for St. Louis than facing Chicago, because if you watch Dallas, I don't think their defense as a whole isn't as good as Chicago, and Chicago obviously is, you know, has heavy star power in their top three. You know, the rest of the group is maybe leaves a little bit to be desired, but from a goaltending standpoint, it's not even close. So, you know, I would like St. Louis, to be honest with you. This is such a mental hurdle for them to get over, to get past the first round. I mean, if they can do that, then, you know, who knows how far this can go for St. Louis throughout the course of the spring. Obviously, they got to get through tonight first. But in a matchup against Dallas, I understand what they bring offensively and how much firepower they have and how they can score almost at will. But I would like St. Louis in that matchup. St. Louis's ability to defend and then their depth at the goaltending position, in my opinion, would give them an edge over the Dallas Stars.
Interesting. All right. Thank you, Andy.
Am I wrong, then? What's your take? You disagree with me?
Listen, I don't want to make any predictions here because obviously a lot of people will be hearing this, you know, after the Blues game is done. But I guess I already did make a prediction when I predicted the Blackhawks in seven before the playoffs. So this entire conversation about the Dallas Stars is immaterial because obviously Chicago in seven.
All right, so to producer Sam, you can just, for the privilege of those that are going to be downloading this on iTunes, you can just remove that last question that I had for Andy because it's moved, according to Greg Wyshynski. Thanks, Strick. Always
Thank
good
you,
catching
Andy.
Up, pal. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, thanks for that. By the way, Gary Bettman in the house tonight, too, so I don't know if that means it's a bigger game or not.
Oh,
but he'll be here, baby.
Man. That's
Looking
exciting.
Forward to that.
That means it'll be thanks the single... That means that there will be not a single penalty call the entire night, is what that means. Or every penalty be called.
I was
going to
say, quite the opposite. Right down the middle by the book, Bill Alfonso, right there. Okay, anyway, Andy, always a pleasure, man. We'll catch up soon.
All right, take care, boys. Talk to you soon.
Andy Strickland, my main man. You know when I first met Andy?
Where?
I met Andy when I was doing the Leafs Lunch radio program, and Ooh. It's funny because he just mentioned the playoffs with the St. Louis Blues. This was right after the St. Louis Blues San Jose Sharks playoff series where Michael Danton, nay Jefferson, tried to have his agent David Frost killed.
Mike
and Andy was the main guy that I talked to in St. Louis, and I was very... At that time, rather close with the Jefferson family Jefferson. I don't want to call them the Danton family because that's the name that Mike assumed. But I was very close with the Jefferson family. And so Andy and I would compare notes and compare threatening voice messages from David Frost on our answering machines. Like, hey, dude, I got a new one from Frost. You want to hear it? 2 o'clock in the morning from David Frost. Get a phone call from Andy Strickland. He just called me again, left a message. You want to hear it?
Oh, boy.
Oh, hilarious times.
That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. So that's your St. Louis bit, and we talked about Dallas, talked about the Islanders, Lightning, whatever. Red Wings getaway today has been kind of awkward. A lot of sort of like scattershot Kenny Holland. Not quite sure. I mean, he's like, we're gonna, you know, go younger players, but it's not a rebuild. But they're gonna be bigger players, and also we're not gonna go after. He said there are no franchise changing players in the UFA market. Does that mean they're not gonna be in the market for Steven Stamkos?
Depends what they can do with the contract of Pavel Datsyuk.
Mm-hmm. And then he also said that they might keep the contract on the books if it means dealing away a high draft pick or a prospect to get rid of it. Oh, man. What a fun little summer this is going to be in Detroit.
This one's got Ken Holland twisting here a little bit. I don't know how you get out from under the weight of, oh, God, we need to have a competitive lineup. See, first of all, I understand his point about saying rebuild because no general manager wants to say the word. Like, look, we all know what it is. It's rebuild. Like, look who's gonna assume much more weightier spots. It's gonna be 71. It's gonna be 72, right? It's gonna be Dylan Larkin. It's gonna be Andreas Athanasiou. It's gonna be all these young. Anthony Mantha is probably gonna get more of a sniff. Mm-hmm. You know, it's gonna be a lot of these guys that get more ice time starting next season. It's called rebuild, folks. And just because you have Henrik Zetterberg still there in his 40s, just because you still have, I don't know, Justin Abdelkader, who's, is he 30 yet? I think he's 30. Who's 30 years old, doesn't mean that you're not going young. And that's the way the Detroit Red Wings are doing it. But you're always sensitive. You're always sensitive to your season ticket holders and what your vocabulary, what message your vocabulary sends to them. And if your season ticket renewal comes back and it's at the same price that it was when Pavel Datsyuk was in the lineup and your general manager is saying, we're rebuilding, do you not say to yourself, hold on a second here, why am I paying this much for this ticket? It's an awkward word that a lot of GMs just don't, and I can understand it and I agree with them. Like it's a tricky word. Rebuild is one that general managers generally don't like to use. It's a retooling. It's a massaging of the lineup. It's No.
Duckies and Preds. Bruce Boudreau whipping up the recipe for success again, bitching about your star players taking dumb penalties and not playing up to standards, switching goalies, and then lo and behold, look at you. Look at you. Well, look at where you are on the precipice of advancing.
Isn't goalie the big one there?
Oh, of course.
Like, goalie's the big one in this one. Like, oh, wow, what have they done? How have they changed this? Freddie Anderson stopped the puck. Like, I don't know. Like, what happened a couple of years ago with San Jose and Los Angeles when San Jose was up 3-0? I don't know. Like, couldn't get a save. Hockey sometimes just isn't that complicated, I guess.
Yeah. They're a real day. That, if they do end up advancing, and it's not to say that they will, obviously we don't know because it's being done before that game. That San Jose Ducks series is going to be a hell of a thing, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it is. I can't wait. Surprised it took us this long to mention San Jose, by the way.
Duckies,
oh, no, look, it's at 4:20 you mentioned San Jose. Perfect.
Woo! Duckies, by the way, 3.20 goals per game, which is also the goals per game average of the San Jose Sharks through five games.
Dun, 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 dun. Logan Couture, the best friends on the Ducks.
Of course, yeah. The big difference is that the San Jose Sharks penalty kill is at 78% and the Anaheim Ducks power play is at 10.5%. What is happening there?
They can't stay. It's one series. It's a bad week.
All right.
That's the thing about the playoffs. How accurate is it?
Let's talk about these bastards in teal.
Love
you, dumb son of a bitches. This is what was supposed to happen the last time. Why couldn't you make it happen the last time?
Did you enjoy my snarky tweet?
Yeah, I did.
Thought you'd like that.
That was the San Jose Sharks exerting their will in the course of that series. Like, I did not think
normally,
they could.
Normally San Jose loses that. Right? Don't the San Jose Sharks lose that game?
When the Kings creep back into it? Yeah, they
do. Yes. Normally it's like, this sucks. I want to go home. Streetlights are on. I got to go. Nope. Not this time.
Yeah. Quick didn't outplay Jones. I thought that was going to be the difference in the series.
Can
Jones
we stop
is great.
Talking about Quick as being amongst the elite
You stop it. He
in
is an elite okay. goalie in the playoffs. He's always been an elite goalie in the playoffs. He just didn't have a very good series.
Who are you trying to convince, me or you?
No, from my mouth to God's ears, he's a great playoff goalie. Just didn't have a good series.
All right.
You don't think he is?
No. No, I'm off. I'm off the Quick train.
All right, are you going to join this cultish revisionist history that says that like they were mistaken to let Martin Jones go? They should have kept him around.
I'm not going to be there. I'm just not at that, Henrik Lundqvist level. Although I'm talking about a goalie that got the hook three times. I don't think he's at that level. I think there's been a certain mystique around that's been built around Jonathan Quick that I just don't see it.
So if you're Dean Lombardi, you are no doubt preparing a 5-hour dissertation about playoff losses, Greek history, military history, all of it.
That's the Panthers. That's the Panthers. That's the West Point Panthers.
The question is you think the Kings take that tact that Andy Strickland was talking about, where it's wrong opponent, wrong season, we're on the right course, or do you think there needs to be some serious retooling of this team up front and on the blue line heading into next season?
I think blue line's the big one. Let me ask you two questions. How did Los Angeles do in the playoffs this year?
They did not do well.
Okay, so they were out in the blank round.
First round.
How did they do in the playoffs last year?
Well, it's kind of hard to do well in the playoffs, sir, when... Yeah. Because I believe the lotto motto here in New York and New Jersey is you got to be in it to win it.
Correct. So last year they didn't make the playoffs. This year they're out in the first round. What does that... Because I know we all want to buy into what the Los Angeles Kings, perennial Stanley Cup, you know, favorites. But what does that tell us about where the Los Angeles Kings are at right now? Or is it just a 2-year blip on the radar?
Well, you're in a competitive conference, and last year I thought was a symptom of, we can turn this on whenever we want to, and then they couldn't. This year they got super serious and nearly won the Pacific and didn't. So where are they right now? I don't know. I'm truly baffled as to what they do. Do they bring back Lucic at what will probably be a 6-year contract, maybe a 6-over-6 deal, something like that? Do you bring him back?
Yeah. I know. And it sounds like he wants to stay, and it sounds like they want him. See, here's where it gets even more complicated. Here's where it gets even trickier for the Los Angeles Kings. So they head into this year's draft having traded their first-round pick. That was the Sequeira deal. Roland McEwen also going the other way, who, for my money, is the best defenseman in the OHL, but that's for a different podcast. You gave up a third in the LeCavalier deal.
Literally a different podcast.
Yeah, I know. A sixth to Philadelphia, and... Yeah. So you're going in there without your first-round draft pick this year and two other middle-round picks, mid- to late-round picks.
You buy out Scuderi.
It ain't getting any easier from Mike Fuda's desk either.
You buy out Scuderi. What do you do with Shen? You sign him?
He was bad, but you got to make some decisions. I don't know. This one's this one's a hornet's nest. It's not. You know what it's like? It's like a freaking Gordian knot is what it is. Because you're kind of stuck here because you've got big money committed to big-time players.
Yeah.
Right? And Doughty and Kopitar. And you also have big money to Dustin Brown.
Yeah. I was going to say, big-time players and Dustin Brown.
Yeah. Who, that one game that he shows up and forces two turnovers in the offensive zone and you win, you say to yourself, screw the money. That's why we got Dustin Brown. Oh, yeah, look at the money. Well, let's go to general manager here. Oh, it's till 2022.
5.875 through 2022 on Dustin Brown. That's just crazy.
I know. And, you know, complicating the whole thing, even though he says he's not going to retire. You know, the lover of a fantastic story in me wants Vinny LeCavalier to say, I'm kind of feeling it here in L.A., boys. Nah, but he's going to move back to Tampa and shut it down, so that gives him a little bit of relief.
Gabrick, 4.875 through 2021. And now all of a sudden he's Gabrick again, where he can't keep him healthy.
Yeah, and your goaltender is at 5.8.
What happened to the dynasty? This was going to be a dynasty. It was going to be dynastic, and they were going to win another cup, and they were going to put the pressure on the Blackhawks to win another one so they can prove they're the real dynasty. What happened to the whole of that? That was going to be so much fun.
Honestly, I know I'm being cheeky about the whole thing. No Martinez, and they need one more defenseman. And a lot of things fixed themselves. Like, Peaking. Honestly, dude. Like, Tyler Toffoli went cold in the series. He's a hell of a hockey player.
Paging Dan Girardi.
That is a fascinating one. You want to talk about the knot that LA has? Let's go to New York Rangers, all right?
Rangers
if you really
out.
You want to twist your brain? Go to the Rangers.
Rangers out to the Penguins, obviously. Penguins Capitals. We'll be dealing with that series in total. Don't worry about that before it happens. But Rangers Penguins, interesting one in the sense that, like, obviously the Penguins buzzsaw is too much. Obviously we talked about Murray. Murray's Cam Warden this bitch as we speak, or Ken Dryden this bitch, depending on your age. I'm going to Rangers Getaway Day tomorrow. I'm going to Breakdown Day tomorrow, and I'm going for one reason. Can you guess the reason?
The head of Dan Girardi.
No. And by the way, the head of Dan Girardi, I just assume will just fall off on its own at some point, because that's the
block
way it's going.
So many shots. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Again, folks, the lesson, whether it's Jay McKee, God love him, whether it's Anton Volchenkov, God love him, you'd never win paying shot blockers.
Right. I'm going to break down day, and I'll narrow it down for you. I'm not going for Mark Stahl. I'm not going for Jordan Stahl.
Oh,
I'm not going for Jared
boy.
Stahl. I'm going to hear what the guy who didn't hit the score sheet in a playoff series after being the big deadline acquisition, becoming a third liner, and has a contract that pays him that much, and he's an unrestricted free agent. What in the name of God does Eric Stahl do now? What is the market for Eric Stahl? Where does he go? Does he crawl back to Raleigh? Probably. What do they pay him when he does? This is insane. I don't think this has gotten enough play, to be honest with you. The fact that a huge name like that moves at the deadline, moves for some considerable futures, and was, I mean, people talk about Vanek having been a bust for like Montreal that one year. Eric Stahl made Vanek like the Conn Smythe winner by comparison. He was unbelievably ineffective for this team.
Yeah, a lot of time on the wing, and then they gave him that chance, and they put him in the middle. Try to put him in the best possible position to succeed.
And nada.
No.
What do you do?
I don't know, because it's not as if he was lighting it up for Carolina when they made the trade in the first place.
So is this the new Vinny LeCavalier? Is this a guy who used to put up 40 goals that has now descended into becoming a role player? Is he gone from leading man to character actor before our eyes?
No, because there's no Paul Holmgren now to give him a $5 million times five contract. The years of, he really cost himself. Like, that's the thing about going to New York. It's one thing, with all due respect, it's all, one thing to do it in Carolina, you know, to play poorly. But when you have that kind of performance in New York, everybody sees you.
You do, but strangely not. I mean, like, if a player like that's acquired by the Yankees and he shits the bed the way Stahl did, then he is on the back page of every paper. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's because everybody came to grips with the idea that he wasn't a top-line player. For whatever reason, he's not gotten pilloried the same way. That said, the rest of the hockey world noticed. Yeah. That's for sure. All right, in the remaining moments we have here, obviously got to talk about the Capitals. We called Game 3 the character test pass when they walked into the Ed Snyder wake and won the game. And then things got a little wonky, a little crazy for them back in Washington. And then they win Game 5.
Let me throw one thing out at you about Game 5. To me, Game 5 was a ridiculous game by the Washington Capitals, and ridiculous by one player specifically, and that's Alex Ovechkin. Now, what did you call it? This isn't going to be a Milbarian dissection. What did you refer to it as last week? Can't remember. It was freaking hilarious, though.
It was Milbarian, but it was also great. Just real briefly, someone tweeted a photo of their cat at me over the weekend and said the cat didn't like hearing what Mike Milbury was saying on NBC, to which I then said, it's a shame, this pussification of hockey. And I really thought it was one of the funniest things I've ever tweeted. It didn't really go all that far. So I'm patting myself on the back for that line now.
That's good. All right. But, you know, Alexander Ovechkin came out that game and was hitting everything in sight. I don't know that in a game where I can close out the Philadelphia Flyers, I want my superstar to do that. Good. I mean, it's fun to watch, and God, when he gets his motor going and he starts dropping guys, it's insane, because here comes this 45-pound freight train that's going to destroy people. But if there was ever a game where you just want Ovechkin, just play hockey, because you're so awesome, you're going to go down as one of, if not the greatest goal scorer of all time. There you go, folks. He's that good.
Hey.
Just coming out as a torpedo all game long. I'm like, what is he doing? Like, I know you want to show that you're tough in front of your home crowd, but win the game. Just win the game. He's so good.
Real brief, Neuwirth in Game 5 was absolutely brilliant. I followed this guy's career for many, many years when he was in Washington. Then he bounced around as a journeyman after he asked out. That is the performance of his career in that game. And I really, I know more than a few people thought that they were going to do it in Game 6 and send it back to 7. And he nearly did if he had any offensive support. Caps-Pens preview as we get closer to it.
Yeah, man. Hey, chin up, Cats. Chin up, Florida Panthers fans. Like, good for the New York Islanders. It was fantastic. And John Tavares was stupid good last night. But there are so many good things going on with the Florida Panthers right now.
And chin up, Flyers fans, because honestly, you were ahead of schedule. You were ahead of schedule. It took Steve Mason dragging you to the playoffs and playing 80 games in a row or some shit. But you got in, and you acquitted yourself pretty well in a couple of these games and made it interesting against a much better opponent. And again, the future is not now for the Flyers. But it's coming, and they're going to be fine.
Provorov's coming. Travis Sanheim's coming. Things are looking good for the Philadelphia Flyers, starting with that blue line, ASAP. Don't you just worry.
Yep.
Don't you just worry.
But, as you said, Panthers feeling good, Flyers good. Red Wings, Kings, and Rangers, you're kind of fucked. But, we'll deal with that another time. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Andy Strickland for joining us. We'll be back again to talk about more puck and the second round and all that stuff. Thanks to Sam for producing, and we'll talk to you down the line. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.